Jan. Viel Spaß.
Danke.
Lights that shine on the distant shore. I like a blinding city where my dreams are born. I like to rush and shudder at a stadium roar, where the underdogs rise and the tires fall, and the thunder rumbles.
My name is Felix Riebel. I am one of the singers in the Cat Empire. I write songs for that band. We are on tour in Europe and America this summer, and really having a wonderful time playing in Germany at the moment. And yeah, the band, for those who don't know it, is a very, very festive, very eclectic, musically dynamic sort of festival outfit that has a wide range of moods and energies that flow through its live shows and its albums as well. And it's a great fun band, very, very colourful.
All right. And how would you describe your music to someone who has never heard about you?
Honestly, I don't really know how to answer the question. It's funny because I've been doing interviews for, you know, a long time now, and and it's still the question that I can't really answer properly. I mean, what I said before, it's very dynamic, you know. I mean, it's sophisticated musicians in terms of, you know, Ollie's a jazz pianist, but a very, very good jazz pianist, and Q Lazaro's singing and playing trumpet, was raised in Havana and you know, played with Afro-Cuban All-Stars, and Nedek has a Brazilian percussion background, Grace Barbe, Seychelles, Creole bass player, songwriter, singer in her own right. There are various languages in the band. Improvisational sections, but also songs that really make a festival crowd move. And a sound that I can't really explain. It's I don't know how, it's like how do you start a conversation when you have, you know, a Cuban, a Seychelles, a Brazilian, an Australian rock guy, you know. It's just a group of eclectic musicians who have come together and over a long time formed a sound that is that people have travelled with and that I've formed an attachment to, and we keep on developing.
But maybe you can say a few words about the major influences.
Well, I think the major influences, I grew up on like Australian rock, and then I met Ollie when I was about 13. This is the foundations of, you know, we started putting bands together when we were about 13, and then we got really into Cuban music, and we got really into, you know, Jamaican, like Ernest Ranglin jazz, and then Ruben Gonzalez and the Afro-Cuban All-Stars and Buena Vista, and Manu Chao kind of came into our lives, and a few more Europe, sort of cross-European, Spanish, French influences. We got an album, I'm talking about early influences of the band. I remember someone gave me an album by Sieg, that German dub band, you know, a CD, which was, we couldn't get it in Australia, you know, in the summer of early 2000s sometime, and we basically explored a lot of different styles, and now I think, you know, we've just been working on music that has a really, really strong flamenco influence, you know, working with Spanish musicians, and so influences are vast and many, you know, like the band opens its shows sometimes by genuine roving, you know, Batucada style roving, which is led by Neto, and we have instruments all over the world on stage. I'm sorry to talk so long about this, there are a lot of influences in the band, you know, but we're born and raised in Melbourne, Australia, and that has a very, very eclectic and wonderful music scene as well, especially when this band was coming up, that city also really raised us, so the influences are vast and many.
All right. Funny that you mentioned Ernest Ranglin, because I've seen him here at the Kultur, five or 6 years ago, something like that.
He's wonderful.
Yes, I love him.
Yeah.
What have been your latest music discoveries?
My latest?
Maybe there's something that really excited you or impressed you very much in any kind.
There was an album that Danny was playing the other day. It was actually just a song from an album, which was a gospel one, and it was, I want to say it's Father Blake. I'm going to find the name of this album and let you know, because that was one of the most beautiful things I've heard in quite a while. I've been learning learning a new instrument, the Cuban tres, for the past few years and really practicing that a lot. So I've been going back to sort of early Cuban song music, Faustino Aramas and like Pío Leiva and, you know, like sort of older generation Cuban musicians have been really exciting for me. Like I said, I mean, I've really went down a kind of a flamenco rabbit hole with some musicians and revisited Camarón de la Isla's electric album. And what else? There's a lot going around, but I'd say that they're sort of fairly present in my life at the moment, those artists I mentioned, yeah.
All right. Where do you get your inspiration for your music productions? Okay. Is there any strategy to write new songs?
You mean to write new songs or to produce them once they're written?
Both, actually.
Well, to write them, with this group that we tour with, it's very musical all the time. Like, really, we play long shows, and then after the show, we usually play more music for, you know, the next hour or two, you know. And a lot of those songs are songs that you have to be able to sing with a group of people, maybe a few trumpets and a tres or a guitar in a room. And it's been really wonderful. I mean, that's a celebration. That's we do that because we enjoy it. But it's also, it really taught me a lot about the sorts of songs I want to write now in terms of melodies. It's like, if you can write a song that sings in a room full of people like that with a very basic instrument, then I feel like the melody is really pure. And a lot of those, like I said, old Cuban songs or some of the Seychelles Creole songs that Grace has brought to those sorts of play-alongs have really taught me a lot about melody writing. So lately I've been really trying to write songs that have very strong, simple melodies to them that can be sung in a very communal way. Aside from that, for a long time I wrote songs on piano, and more recently, like I said, I've been writing songs on tres, which is a type of guitar. And in terms of productions, it really changes. I feel like the album that we're on tour with at the moment is called Where the Angels Fall, and that album was done with a producer called Andy Baldwin, who's just likes a lot of stuff in albums. And so, you know, we'd have like symphonic string sections in a song, and we'd have like Brazilian like roving ensembles, you know, in the basis of a song, it was just very full of sound, and then we treated each song as a world to itself, and we made it in this community hall in Melbourne with, I think it involved something like 70 musicians all up, you know, in terms of all the people who played on it. Whereas the recordings that we've just been doing recently were really quite different to that. We just rehearsed quite a lot and found arrangements that we thought were really exciting musically, and then we basically recorded them live, more or less, in a room, added a few details afterwards, but wanted to get that sort of band love in the room sort of feeling. So it's really depending on how we're feeling and what suits the song in terms of how we produce our music.
What role do the lyrics play for you?
The lyrics are the most important part for me. That's something I think is the first, I think it's the hardest thing to write in a song. It's funny because sometimes they seem so simple, and sometimes they are. Sometimes lyrics can be written very, very quick. But for me, lyrics, I grew up really, really focusing on lyrics a lot when I listened to other songwriters. And I guess more and more with lyrics, I want them to sort of feel like they evoke a world rather than a story or a sentiment that I can necessarily understand. I mean, songs are different. Some songs can be very specifically about something, and some songs I feel like want to, for me, feel authentic or feel really genuine or feel exciting to sing, but let their meaning be a little bit more abstract. I feel like that can be quite fun as well musically. But either way, there's something about when you write lyrics, there's just a feeling, you know. You can see it on a computer screen if you're writing it there, or even on a page if you're writing it down or something like that. It just sort of feels like they're right when they're right, like, or that it's a song when the lyrics arrive, for me anyway, which is quite a distinct feeling. It's just like, okay, you could have a great idea for a song, or good melodies, or good chords, or like good rhythm ideas and stuff like that. But until the lyrics are there, for me, it doesn't feel quite like a song. So the lyrics are the thing that finishes the song for me. Okay. I think.
The way people are listening and also searching for music changed essentially within the latest, let's say, centuries, do you think music as such has changed fundamentally too?
It's a difficult question. No, I don't think music itself has changed fundamentally. But for me, doing things like playing, being close to people and singing in a room, you know, like this, or like you may see if you make it to after the show, or before the show, just to be in the room singing, the essentials of music, I think people are still being moved by music, whatever it may be, and are still connecting musically as musicians, you know. I think music can't change fundamentally, no matter what era you're in or anything. I think truly people can't really live without music in one way or another. I think it's a fundamental part of people's capacity to enjoy, experience, celebrate, ritualize, whatever. Music is a... So no, I don't think music's changed fundamentally. The way that people hear their music or get their music or discover their music has changed a lot. It's changed in the course of this band's career so far enormously. It's sort of more accessible now, but it's also less meaningful in some ways at different points. You know, for instance, we used to go and have to order a CD from overseas that we wanted. If you discovered an act or something like that, you'd have to go to the I remember the CD store in the city, you have to catch the tram in as a teenager and go in there, order it, you have to wait for 6-8 weeks for the finish to come in, and then you got this parcel that you used all your pocket money on or all of your paper round money on or whatever to get this parcel, and I remember valuing it so much as it was like a treasure. And then I had it and I would listen to it back to front, you know, and there would be like a with CDs, for example, or with tapes and vinyls. It was just like they were. You'd read the booklets, you'd listen to the songs. Even when you didn't really feel like listening to it, you'd put it on because you didn't have anything else to play at that time, so you'd still hear it. So you'd get to know. I got to know albums and artists in a way that I found to be more intimate. Whereas now I feel like I know a lot more artists, and I know I have a broader musical palette, and I can open whatever streaming platform I'm, you know, happen to be on at that time and have the world of music there. But I feel like it's potentially taken for granted a bit or something like that. And it's not that same sort of reverence of here we listen. I think music is potentially taken for granted more than it has been in past times. And I think whether that affects the music or not, or whether artists have to make certain music that they wouldn't otherwise make if they were not, I'm not sure. There's pros and cons to it. So I'm rambling a bit, but it's an interesting question because, like, the, you know, in some ways artists can get recognised, they can be discovered, there's social media, there's all those other sorts of things that we didn't grow up with, and that I still feel somewhat alien towards, you know, in terms of that. I feel more and more drawn to the essentials of what a good musical experience is for me, and that's still really listening to an album, cooking to an album, or celebrating to an album, whatever it is, or writing music and being in the room with people, or being on stage with people, or being in the studio with musicians I love, and actually feeling that that's where the life is for me. So I don't think fundamentals change, but the process and the atmosphere around the industry and the listenership certainly has.
Do you think people nowadays, especially young people, are less interested in acoustic music?
Maybe, yeah, I'm not sure. It's hard to say. Do you think so?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that there's an expectation now that young people, it's okay for someone to press play and sing with a microphone kind of thing, you know, on something, or for a lot of bands, and a lot of bands to be running track, for example, you know, as they play and stuff, which is not an overt criticism necessarily. I think that there are certain projects where that can work, and then other times where I think is like we, a young person coming into music. For us, like I said, we were part of a music scene that was very, very, very hands-on. You know, like we would knock on the windows of really great older bands than us in Melbourne when we were teenagers, just to sit in and play with them. And then sometimes that would go all night and you'd play, and then you'd do 3 or 4 shows a week just to pay your rent. and then you'd go and sit in with bands all the time and play, and it was quite competitive, but in a generous way. You were expected to be able to really play your instrument, and we loved the community that we're in, and we go from this club to that club. Ollie and I, we met when we were 15 or 14, we're sneaking into jazz clubs or whatever clubs we could, and getting our fake ideas just to go and see music every available opportunity, kind of thing, so it was. And there was a thirst for it. There was a community. We got to know the people. They welcomed us in. We learned stuff from them. We learned how to play really as much from them as we did from our teachers by actually doing it. So, and I'm not sure. I've got two kids now, so I don't go out as much as I used to, So I get my kicks there. But I feel like the kids of this generation, I hope that they've got something that they're as passionate about, whether it's electronic music or whether it's, I don't mind what music it is, just as long as it's not sort of considered background. Music has to have lifeblood in it, it has to have skin in the game, it has to have the risk of infection, it's like, it needs to be at that level, I think, to be interesting for me.
Yeah. I think one of the problems is that people can no longer, or let's say, differentiate between what is really live and what not, because there's DJs who are really doing a lot live things, and there's others who just push the play button.
There's a bit of column A and a bit of column B, I'd say, and it's also the same as bands who run track. It's just personally, I love seeing a band where you feel their humanity. And by that, I mean they may be incredible musicians, but you also hear the cracks in their voice. You hear the split notes. You hear the speed ups and the slows down. From the rhythm section. And to me, that's a more human experience. But like I said, I might be a dinosaur. I don't know. It's I can't speak for the young generation. Just in the same way that the older generations couldn't speak for us when we were coming through. So all I hope is that they have passion in whatever they're doing in the way that they're experiencing sound, music, expression. I hope so.
Do you think that there's still a realistic chance for mankind to live in harmony with nature?
Yes, I do. I do. More than anything, it's just, I look at society, and there's so many things about society where we just sort of take them as set, as this is how it's supposed to be, it's just, I guess school starts to teach you that from a young age, and so much of it is counter to actual nature, I think, and so much of it is counter to actual human enjoyment as well, outside of that, I'm not sure. I feel like I had a fairly blessed childhood. I spent a lot of time in the country, and adored that time. And it's part of the foundation of my whole life. And so I'm skipping your question a bit. Is it possible for society to be one with nature, or more harmonious with nature?
Or are we able to stop climate change?
No, we haven't. Climate change is happening at the moment. It's clearly happening. It's not up for grabs, I don't think, in terms of those things. Climate change is happening. How far climate change goes, based on the reading that I've done, is still up for grabs, I think. I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that is. I do know that I, despite everything, still feel affection towards humanity, as ridiculous and dysfunctional and cruel as we as a collective can be. I think I'm a musician. I've been very blessed to be a musician. I'm around musicians who I really like, and I've seen people behave in ways that I find very exciting. So I can only say that I certainly hope so. I have kids and I want them to experience a life as sort of rich and exciting and fun as the one that I've been able to live. Yeah.
And what's your contribution to live in harmony with nature?
To make music, to offset carbon, to try and make decisions as best as we can in the context of the parameters of society that we're living in, our political leanings. organizations, people who I support. But also on the flip side to that, there's I think the feeling that a lot of people get as well, which is, I don't do enough. I don't do enough either. That's true. On all those sides, I'm aware of where, you know, where I sit with it, and it's certainly not from a position of saying I think I'm okay and it's all their fault. But I think that this is a collective societal problem, and it needs to be addressed one way or another.
So let's come back to this place here. What are your expectations for tonight?
My expectations are that the band will do a really good show, you know. I don't mean that in an arrogant way. I just mean that this group is very, very special, you know, this KFI collective of musicians, and we have a good time. We really, really do. We're focused on what we're here for. We're very, very good friends, but we're serious about our music. And whether we're, you know, in front of an absolutely packed festival crowd, or in front of, you know, 100 people in a, you know, in a new city, in a place we've never been, the band still puts exactly the same energy and joy into the show. So I think in that way we have a really good, generous bunch, and I enjoy playing with them a lot. It's fun. We're having a great time on this tour. And so my expectations are that we'll go out there and do our thing, and hopefully the audience comes with us. I often do, and that's exciting.
All right. Do you have any, maybe some kind of listener message? Anything you would like to leave to the listeners of the radio?
Well, my message is to hopefully you can come and check out the show, listen to our music, and to enjoy your music regardless of who it is or what it is you're doing. And be passionate about it. Come to shows, support musicians, get back into seeing people, and get back into nature. I think part of nature and the stuff you've been talking about is also actually being around people, not being kind of totally distanced on a screen all the time. So go out there and have some fun, and we'll see you around the tracks.